people aren't necessarily afraid of change. They're really afraid of loss. And in some cases, they're afraid that all the work they've done for many years is meaningless. You're going to come in and change the way I've done this job for 15 years. You're telling me I'm wrong. I'm like, no, no, no. I'm telling you, everything that you've done up to this point has made it to where we are, and we're thankful for that.
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, a show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang. And with me today is the Dr. Colton Strasser. He is the president of Colton Strasser Consulting, which makes sense if you think about it. He is also the executive director of the North Texas Nonprofit Institute, which sounds fancy. We may call him professor today. Dr. Strasser helps nonprofits develop the data, funding, and leadership skills necessary to influence change. Hallelujah. Having trained over 1,500 nonprofit executives, that's a big number, and generated over 25 million, that's million with an M, it'd be weird if it didn't, in government grants and conducted research, needs assessments on various local social issues, and has helped him develop a process that is guaranteed to help your organization understand community needs, establish goals to address them, and achieve civic outcomes. Welcome to the show, Colton.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kenny. I appreciate it.
It is going to be fun. I always enjoy our conversations. We're just now we're going to record them, and people are either going to be excited or terrified, but I'm okay with that sort of divisiveness. Tell me today, Colton, what is on your mind?
Yeah, there's a lot on my mind. Always is, which is great. Hashtag job security. But In terms of what's going on in the world and what's going on with leadership is I've been talking to a lot of organizations about lots of things, transition, talking about reaction, proactivity, reactivity. Now is a time for leadership, if there ever was one, when there are leadership voids or negative leadership. There's definitely a need for people to take ownership and to step up, step out, and get to stepping with different things. There's a lot of leadership challenges in just our world, both within our organizations, our communities, our political environment. I was hanging out with some Canadian friends last week, and they're like, what the heck is going on? And I'm like, I don't know. But it's just been quite the interesting last couple of months, if you've been paying attention to anything, for sure.
Yeah. I love the idea that, and to be honest, like I've heard this a lot over the years, like just anytime there are key transitions in large systems, be it government and political here, Canada certainly has their own fun things to deal with, but it could be just internal shifts in leadership in an organization, which is something you and I both, we again, hashtag job security, that we both deal with and help with a lot. What is it about transitions that makes strong leadership, solid leadership, or a particular type of leadership maybe more necessary in those certain moments? And does the type of leadership needed from moment to moment or time to time in your experiences, does that need to change? Do we need different types of leaders for different types of moments?
I definitely think we do. I've worked with organizations that have had the same leaders for 20 years and they're doing great. I've seen others that have had the same one for 20 years and I'm like, y'all are seizing up. It's a little antiquated. They're like, we're not growing anymore. And I always am thankful for all the work it took to get us where we are. But I recognize that sometimes the type of work or the way we work might need to be different to get us to where we want to be. And so it's like Marie Kondoing it. Like this work brought me joy and this brought joy and it got me to where I am and it served its purpose. I am thankful for it, but I must change. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but people really hate change. People get comfortable where they are. And I try to do a lot of work getting people uncomfortable. One of the things I tell people to do all the time is I'm like, just try it on. If you see some outfit, you're like, oh God, I don't know if I'd be comfortable in that. I'm like, just try it on. Or as one of my friends with toddlers would say, take a no thank you bite. Even though you don't want to eat it, go ahead and say and take a no thank you bite. You may enjoy it, or you may realize, gosh, I really hate broccoli, but take a no thank you bite. And so sometimes when we're doing change management, people aren't necessarily afraid of change. They're really afraid of loss. And in some cases, they're afraid that all the work they've done for many years is meaningless. You're going to come in and change the way I've done this job for 15 years. You're telling me I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, no, no. I'm telling you, everything that you've done up to this point has made it to where we are, and we're thankful for that. Everyone, when I come in and do organizational change with their organizations, I'm not coming in with a bunch of flaming arrows and giving everything a Viking funeral. I'm more so like, how can we just like maybe dust this, polish it, maybe paint it? Every once in a while, we're like, yeah, that don't belong anymore. Everyone grab your bow and arrow. We're sending this up in flames. But usually it's making minor adjustments and changing a couple things clockwise or counterclockwise or things like that. It's not fundamentally changing stuff. Every new iPhone that comes out is pretty much the same iPhone. It's slightly different. There's slight improvements, but usually it works. I discover new features all the time. There's relatively some consistency with it. And if the iPhone was a flop and it came out and it was terrible and whatever, we wouldn't have continued using it. So the fact that you've done this job the way you've done it for 15 years is great. We just need to make some slight adjustments because the world changes, people change, the way we work changes, technology changes. And so as the world around us is changing, sometimes we have to be open to that change too and be okay with it and realize that being able to change is more of a blessing than it is a curse. It's the fact that you have the opportunity to do something different and do something better is rather a gift than deleting everything at all. So changing the way you change is really helpful.
Yeah, having that change of perspective. I really like that the number one, calling it an opportunity. I have little stickers that I give out when I start a new engagement. One of them says, everything's an opportunity. Just can we frame up, like, they're not issues and problems and stuff. They may legitimately be that. But what would happen if we reframed it as an opportunity? But I love what you were saying is that opportunity to change really is a blessing. For some, it may even feel more like a privilege.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you could elaborate on that and why. And it sounds like that's not a commonly held perspective because it's one that you're helping people see. What is the prevailing wisdom that causes people to not see that the chance to change is really a blessing for them as opposed to, oh, dear God, like we have to do this?
I think a lot of it comes down to communication when it comes to change, really thinking about talking to folks about what's working and what's not. I think oftentimes when we hear the word change, it's almost like we're changing because we're fixing a negative. Oh, I need to change my tire. The old tire's not working. Or, I got something on me and you go change my clothes. I need to go change this or that. And so change has like a deficit attached to it. And I think sometimes when I view change, I make sure, and this is something I've adopted the last couple of years, is there's been some moments in my life where I hated change. This is too much. This is overwhelming, especially when you're already maybe towards the point of burnout. You're like overwhelmed already. You're like, gosh, now I got to figure out how to change it. I've been really mindful in talking with organizations about honoring the work and honoring the process that got them to where they are. And really thinking about, and once I started telling people, if we give you any feedback for changes, I first want to, it's like giving them the acknowledgement that like you got here. And usually when I work with organizations, some of them are on the point of burnout and they're just like, I interviewed a whole bunch of staff members separately and the word they used was overwhelmed. They're like, I'm just overwhelmed. Mm. And I'm like, okay, and this is the try it on thing. If you could change anything to make it different, what would it be? But just viewing it more as a positive or the magic wand. If you could wave your magic wand and have three wishes. And a lot of the times the things they wish for are just so simple that I'm like, okay, We could do that. And I had one staff member say, "You're a wizard." After I changed something at their organization, I'm like, I just created a different form that streamlines all of this stuff. So sometimes it's really hard to do change internally sometimes, which is not doing a shameless plug here, but having someone from the outside, like a consultant or someone else looking at it from a different perspective is really, I've had people call me, they're like, "Okay, tell me if I need to suck it up or if I'm crazy or if this situation's wonky." And I'm like, "Okay, all three, let's go." So in some cases it is, but having some outside perspective or just being willing to try it on, be willing to maybe just admit that you don't have it figured out. And there could be just entertaining the idea that something could be different is an opportunity for change. And sometimes baby steps are perfectly fine progress points for change. And some people are like, "Let's tear it down and start over." And I'm like, "Why don't we just renovate over here a little bit first and then see how that goes?"
Right.
So that's some perspective too, is just trying it on and thinking of it a little differently.
Right. Yeah. You could do a pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I do think, to your point, like words matter. Because they frame our perception of the situation. They frame our reality. And sometimes just a simple shift in language can be helpful. I heard somebody who he was speaking on leadership podcast or conference or something like that. I get source amnesia. And then I just believe that I said all these brilliant things. I feel like an artist. But he said, he goes, "I don't know that it's so much that people don't like change. Because people love to get raises. They love new haircuts, new houses, new cars. That's all change. But to your point, it's not a negative. It's not a fixing a flat or changing clothes because you spilt something or whatever, or having to give a presentation from memory because the technology in the room doesn't work." He said, "People generally don't like change they didn't initiate." And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit to that, because you and I will both talk to the senior most executives of nonprofits, executive directors, CEOs, whatever their title is, that they may be the change initiator of some sort. But then the rest of their team feels freaked out because maybe they didn't have a vote, or maybe they knew it was coming, but it wasn't their idea, or it's not being done exactly the way they wanted. So what do you tell people when, like, the change isn't a bad one? Like you said, from the outside, objectively, you look at it as, no, like, this is probably the right move, but they didn't initiate it. So how can people start to come to terms with change they didn't initiate, especially if they're not the one with maybe the authority to make those sort of decisions?
So change happens a lot of different ways. One of my favorite models is the Cotter model for change. It's an 8-step model. It's very simple. You can Google it. That's a good model on how it's important to create allies and to bring people together to get feedback. If you're changing the type of coffee you have in the break room, whatever, someone just make a decision. Some change isn't a group decision. It's just like, it is what it is. If you're fundamentally wanting to change something in an organization, you're giving people the opportunity to give feedback, authentically collecting feedback rather than tokenism, where we're just, "Oh, you can give us your feedback, even though we've already made our decision," which happens a lot in the public sector. But really thinking about, people oftentimes know what's wrong, but they may not know what's right or how to change it, that it's themselves. And so you can get a lot of different feedback from folks. I've done community needs assessments where they asked one group of people what the problem was, and they're like, "Oh, it's this." And I'm like, "Okay, that's their perspective." But when we brought in the entire community to have input, it was a whole different problem. Like, that problem wasn't even registering at the top three. And they're like, "Oh, we never thought of that." And I'm like, that's because you only had perspective from one group. And so it's not to say to do a survey in your entire organization or community every time to make a simple decision, but a lot of people can raise up problems or opportunities for improvement, or they can give ideas on how to make things more strategic or whatever. And so really providing the openness for input, because people don't like change prescribed to them. They want to buy into it. And so having the opportunity for them to guide it or have some feedback again, recognizing that always can't happen, but the more you have the opportunity for people to be part of the change, the more they feel committed to it. And that's really what the Cotter model looks, buying into the actual change will make sure the change happens and it'll be like institutionalized versus saying from up on high, here's what we're doing.
Right.
And sometimes that has to happen. I've done both, but it's a lot smoother and people tend to stick around when they have a little bit of an input or a little suggestion of how things work versus it happening to them.
They may not stop it, like this is a change that's happening, but maybe you can be a part of helping shape what this change looks like or the flavor of it or an aspect of it. I think Sam Walton famously said, if people can weigh in, they can buy in. But if you don't give them that opportunity, then it's really hard to buy into what you're saying. Also, there's a phrase I use with a lot of clients, and I always get source amnesia again. So I'm just like giving myself credit for brilliant things that other people said, is a problem well-defined is half solved. So like in the example where they thought, this is the issue. And you talk to the community there, maybe, but that's like number 12, bro. And so that communication, the listening is a key aspect. So if somebody is thinking, okay, I'm a senior leader, I'm an executive director, the responsibility, the accountability sits with me, especially in the nonprofit world, like the CEO executive director isn't sort of the peak of the mountaintop. Exactly. There's a board that they're accountable to. Now you and I can both make the case that in a for-profit, like you're still accountable there to other stakeholders, but those stakeholders couldn't necessarily just oust you like a board could do to an executive director. They may say the accountability sits with me. It's my decision to make. This seems like it would take so much longer. This would go slower. And you know, these people are typically, they're more wired like visionaries, right? They see further, faster. They're already living like 2 years from now. Like their body's here, but the rest of them is somewhere else.
Yeah.
So what do you say to those visionary leaders that they may be listening to this and go, okay, great. Yeah, I already see 10 steps ahead. That's part of my gifting. That's why I'm in my seat. And the authority has been placed in me to make this decision. And if it goes wrong, these people aren't going to pay the price. I am. How do you coach and walk people through that so that they can garner the buy-in while not abdicating their responsibility or the accountability they have for their position?
Oh, gosh. How long do we have? With that question, there's a couple things that come to mind. You mentioned accountability. One of the things I've noticed over the years is people hate to be held accountable. They absolutely hate it. They're calling you on your crap. If you said something and you're going to do it and you don't do it, there should be consequences. A lot of the times within many organizations, there's no consequence. I always say a policy without a punishment is just a strong suggestion. And so if you say you have to do this or else this, there's usually none of that happening within an organization in some cases. So if you think about board of directors, if they're supposed to help raise X number of dollars a year and they don't do that, who's going to call them out on that? Who's going to hold them accountable? Should be the board chair. You should have mechanisms in place where people have key performance indicators. But with a lot of organizations I've worked with, people are doing a job, but they're not really hitting a goal or a metric. And so basically any work done is good work. And it's really needing a reframe around what does success look like? And that's the best gift you can give to people. I steal that from Brené Brown. I remember some of my sources. Her quote or something along the lines is help people understand what done looks like. What is done? And so what is your vision of helpful? What do you want people to hit? And so as a leader, the more clarity you can give people around expectations and goal setting, the better, because then one, they know what they need to do. And two, what you can hold them accountable to. Otherwise, their version of helping might be very low level. And another person's version of being helpful might be really high. Mm-hmm. Both of those people may think, gosh, I help so much. Or in some cases, they may be like, I didn't help at all. And I'm like, you sold 100 tickets to our event. That was helpful. I could have done more. And the other person who sold two is, look at me being so helpful. And so really being mindful of that. The second part to your question as a leader, I'm a fan of being radical. It's a little bit of my brand. I'm the tough love consultant. I'll make you feel good, but also like I'm going to push you to do something different.
Right.
But when it comes to being radical in your communication, I think it's really having radical transparency with your team, letting them know what is going on, not to have panic ensue, but really letting them know what the situation is and where you're at, or at least your senior leadership team. So no one's kind of held in the dark. And then who knows, like sometimes having more people working on the same problem can get better results. Otherwise, it can give people a heads up. Having some radical candor within your organization, being willing to wrestle with problems and to really dig in and talk about it. And then the other one is, which I have the most struggle with, and I learned about this a couple years ago, is radical acceptance. That is one of the most difficult things any leader is going to struggle with, is I've seen my clients before go through like the 5 or 7, I don't know how many stages of grief we have anymore, but I've seen them go through literally all of them in one session. And they don't go, it's not linear either. They get to acceptance. They're like, you know what? I have an idea. And I'm like, oh, we're back to denial. And so in some cases, it's not to say be a doormat, but it's also to be like, with most leaders, they're fixers. Like, okay, I'm gonna fix it. I'm gonna figure it out. We're gonna fix it. And so sometimes you just have to get to the point, and it's really hard, where you're just like, you know what? This has happened. I accept it. Now let's figure out how we're gonna move forward. Rather than trying to untangle the ball of yarn that has been gifted to you in many cases, but okay, this isn't true. We're gonna do that. I'm like, just radically accept it and just be like, you know what? That's how it is. I'm gonna move on. But that's the hardest one, and it takes practice, but it's one of the almost one of the most important things I've learned in my journey, is just to go with the flow and just be like, all right, that happened. What's next? How can I help?
Yeah, that's why I think control is such an illusion. We all, I don't know, maybe leaders are motivated this way. They're like, I'm doing good things. I think you just have felt out of control. And so now you exercise an extreme amount, or at least exert an extreme amount of energy trying to control every variable around you. Yeah. Now, I'm all for, and what I don't hear you saying is, hey, you should just give up on any sense of agency you have over your life or your leadership or your organization. Yeah. Like, you still have choices that are within your sphere of control.
Yeah.
But there's so much that isn't. Something similar, the maybe wasn't radical acceptance, even though I do practice it, that helped me get past, like, oh man, I got a big test, like in college or something like that. I got a big test, blah, 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 blah. Whether I freak out about it or not, the test is happening. Yeah. It has a date. I can't control that. So I might as well go, all right, I'll study some and we'll see where the chips fall. Yeah. But I love the concept of leaders, one of their chief responsibilities is to establish reality. And I'm curious, how much does that play into radical transparency, radical candor, which I love that book. I do an exercise with teams on that. So challenge directly, but care personally. And then radical acceptance. How much is just clearly establishing, and maybe also communicating, reality a part of all of that, and maybe what we've been talking about?
Yeah, so it's important to, I think, keep your team informed. Also recognize that in some cases you have knowledge or insight that maybe needs to be kept a little closer to the chest. If you're a nonprofit executive, like, being really transparent with your board's important, because a lot of them half the time don't know what's going on, and they're in the dark and they're like, I had no idea. And I'm like, you should have known. I think it's seeing what, like, how much feedback or panic do you want in some cases, and sometimes it doesn't lead to panic. There could be really good things that you're keeping close to the chest too. It doesn't have to always be negative. Thinking about how much hope or fear do you want to give to people at any given time? And that's a hard measuring cup to level out. From a leadership standpoint, I'm pretty transparent with my folks. Like they know what's going on. They know where we're at. Everybody has a goal to keep revenue and projects and timelines and everything on track. And I think it's really important to have your systems set up in place where when things are good and bad. And a lot of times people don't know when something bad's happening until it's too late because they don't have any mechanisms. They don't even have any warning signs along the way. It's just, oh no, a cliff. There wasn't,
right.
There wasn't like cliff ahead, emergency, turn around now. Like there should be things in place that kind of give you an idea, like something might not be working exactly how it should. And that's the danger zone is.
Yeah. There's a couple of things. I think we share an affinity for data and KPIs and getting those put into place. They do so much good. I'll see your Brené Brown and raise you a Brené Brown, but clear is kind, right? Like it really is a kindness to people to give them KPIs.
Yeah.
So that they know they're winning and you know they're winning. And then it also helps from a leadership perspective of it's not me or the leader versus the person. It stops being subjective. It's just that person against the standard. Like what is the expectation? I just got done over the last couple of days doing a quarterly planning session with one of my clients. And we always review some of the core tools. And one of them is the scoreboard, like their KPIs. And the two big questions out of three that help us do a quick review are, does it give you a pulse on what's happening? And can you predict what will happen? Like really good KPIs tell you what has happened. Like, okay, cool. Accurately, we could look back and see what happened. And that might be like a balance sheet or something like that, number of tickets sold at an event. But great ones tell you what will happen. Like you said, is something broken or about to break? And could we fix it, address it while it's small, insignificant, or non-fatal? I had a friend who does some coaching. He also says, I like to help them build KPIs that tell you if something's breaking, but also, are we moving at the right pace? And are we doing things at the right quality? Because so many people find it, they're like, oh yes, we would love data. What should we measure?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll start measuring like the dumbest things, like number of followers on Facebook or something else like that. But how do you help people think about what they should be tracking, what they should be looking at, how they can know when things are about to break so that they could intervene and help themselves before it really does a lot of damage to the organization?
I think a lot of nonprofit executives, this is a broad statement, but I've seen it a lot, don't necessarily understand how finance works. They may be a good fundraiser, or they may be a good programs person or marketing or development, all that stuff. But sometimes they don't get how finance works. And so a lot of organizations don't have, even businesses, a cash flow statement, you know, so they sometimes don't know, like every July, they're like, why is it so dry? And I'm like, it's been that way for years. So you should not expect it to come raining down on you with money if it's a dry time. And so it may just be the way your calendar's set up. It may be the way you're pushing everything. Maybe July is a time for you to do an appeal to raise some more money. Yeah, having a cash flow statement and knowing when money comes in and goes out, a lot of places don't know that. And sometimes you don't because it's not super consistent, but that's an opportunity to know. Monitoring and having your KPIs and seeing what are our quarterly goals? What is this? What is that? How can we make improvement? And the other thing is having goals be smart goals, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, time bound, all those different things. A lot of goals aren't smart. They're like, raise more money. I'm like, okay, how? They're like, oh, we're going to write a grant. We're going to write more grants. I'm like, okay, great. Who are you going to ask for that? I called them on their bluff because, yeah, that's the solution to everything. Oh, we're just going to ask more people for money. I'm like, do you have a list of 40 people that might be interested in giving and capable of giving that amount? No. And I'm like, it's not really a goal yet, is it? that's a wish. Right. And so really having mechanisms in place to know how are we doing, and being able to see that, you don't need to be in real time, but reviewing something monthly is helpful. And then if your goal is going to be to ask more, do more, be more, produce more, okay, how? Show me how. And if you can't show me how, then I don't believe you.
Because hope's not a strategy.
I say that all the time, and I need to get it cross-stitched on a pillow so I can scream into it. But you know, hope is not a strategy. It's just, I swear people ask me stuff. I'm like, well, I'm fresh out of miracles today, but you can try tomorrow. It's hope is not a strategy, my friends. You need to know how. You may not know where, but as long as you have a compass, a general direction, and the tenacity to get through it, then, okay, maybe I'll come along with you on the journey. But if you're just like, here's where I want to end up, I have no idea how to get there. And I don't even know if the place exists. I'm like, all right, get your fairy dust, Tinkerbell. We're going to try and fly. It's just not going to happen. Hope is not a strategy, people. Coming soon to a store near you at A Cross Stitch Pillow by Kenny and Colton.
There you go. I like
that. Visit our Etsy page.
Yes, exactly. We're going to link that up. It'll be in the show notes. We should come up. We should have that maybe for not the Leadership Institute, for the summit.
Exactly.
Is just have a small merch table of hope is not a strategy pillows.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure we could come up with that.
Yeah.
I want to tie back this discussion on like data and information back to the topic of change that we started with, which is how does having data, good, and I want to clarify good data, because that's what we've been discussing, because there's data everywhere, but insights are few and far between.
Yep.
But so when I say data, I'm going to also mean like good insights or good data. That'll be implied for you, the listener. What role does it play in change, whether it's in the Cotter model or just in, and how you have seen it play a positive role in helping leaders and those they lead through the change?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head where there's a difference between data and insight. And I include that on a lot of my marketing material where nonprofits have a ton of data. It may not be in a good place spiritually, but physically. And so when it comes to having good data, I was on a call with a client this morning and I said, where do you keep that data? And I, we keep it in our client management system. I'm like, great. How do you put it in there? They're like, oh, we fill out paper forms. We scan it and upload it as a PDF. I'm like, that's useless to me. I can't access it. Yeah. Again, tough love consultant. They're like, oh yeah, we never thought of that. I'm like, you can't aggregate it into a report because it's a PDF. And they're like, oh, so when it comes to having all these tools and stuff, you have to have data in a good location, being accessible and using it. One of the quotes my former boss used to tell me is collect the least amount of data to tell the best story. And so in some cases, organizations, I hate when they're tracking their Facebook metrics. I'm like, no one cares. Unless you're getting $1 million in donations on Facebook and it's the most engagement you have. Okay, cool. I don't care how many followers you have. I used to work in politics. You can buy followers by the unit. So if you want me to create a page by the end of the week that has 1 million followers, great. For enough money, I could do that for you. But when it comes to having good data, it's really hard to argue with numbers because they don't argue back. People will, and you can manipulate numbers to tell them any story. I can take any spreadsheet and make it scream long enough to tell you the number you want to hear. It's really hard to put it data in front of people, which is why I do a lot of organizational assessments. So I have surveys, I do other things, and it comes back with a point value. And it will say something to the effect of, your board leadership is not quite satisfactory. Here's some suggestions on how we can improve it. And they're like, oh, okay. Where if I just came in and looked around, I was like, your board's not that satisfactory. It's marginally adequate. They'd be like, excuse me? How dare you attack me? And really, the numbers and getting people's feedback and giving them numbers back and showing them that it's not sustainable is helpful. I've had some people try to argue with numbers, and that is their choice. It's what I call in my office an option. It's never the right option when I say that. I'm like, oh, that's it. That's an option. They're like,
that's one way to live your life.
Exactly. I had a client say, you didn't say that was a good option. I'm like, very perceptive. It was an option. It's not a good one. But looking at financials and looking at other things, being like, you know, it's having the numbers that will say, this thing going to work or this isn't going to work in the long run. It gives you an opportunity to make some changes. Like, oh, if we do this, this, and this, then we actually do make a profit. We don't lose money. Or we can do other things. And so when it comes to data, figuring out how to get insights from it, you don't need to count every little widget and gadget and gizmo. It's really thinking about, again, what's the least amount of data to tell the biggest story? And when I work with clients on figuring out how to collect data, I always ask them, what are the three things you would like to know the most? And so that's what we start with. And then once they start gathering that, they get better. Rather than me coming in and be like, oh, here's the 26 key metrics that we can track at this agency. Here's a magic spreadsheet. I need to teach you all to use Salesforce, even though I hate Salesforce. I need to do this. It's what are the three things that would be most helpful for you to know right now? And then we start with that and we start adding. And that's how I build out a client dashboard where I had one person say, I just want to know my demographics. And they kept everything in a Google sheet. And so I wrote some formulas and stuff where I'm like, every time you add a new client, it updates your demographics automatically on this one dashboard. They're like, what? And I'm like, it wasn't very challenging because I know Excel really well. But for them, it was just the most wonderful shift ever, because if someone called or they need to write a grant about the client demographics, 50% of our clients are on the autism spectrum, or 40% of our clients are actually under the age of 18 or whatever. It gave them an opportunity to quickly see, rather than going through each client profile, which I've done this before with sticky notes, and I have my little tally marks and I read through each client profile. I'm like, hey, one to this column, one to that column, one to that column. And so they have to do that literally every year. This makes it a little simple. Yeah. So things like that.
That's why I'm such a huge fan of platforms like Databox, where you can filter multiple sources, Google Sheets, things like that, in, and then you create cross sections. You can, and you can make, and it's very pretty, and everybody loves a pretty visual. But I love the idea of the like three, what's three things you want to know? I used to do that when I was in the world of HubSpot agencies, and I would be doing their implementation and they would be like, we got to track this and we're tracking it. And I'm like, time out. I was like, what are 3 to 5 questions you have to answer on a weekly, monthly, or quarterly basis? And if you have a boss, like a board, or maybe you report to the CEO or COO or whoever, I was like, what are they always asking you that you need to have a fast answer for? And when you start framing it that way, they're like, oh, well, suddenly they're like, I need to be able to tell them this. Okay, cool. Let's build a report for that. And it may need to be a little custom. We might need to write some formulas. We might need to figure out, like, you're not tracking this portion of it. So now we need a tracking mechanism and we feed it right in here. And so when people start thinking about what are the questions I need to answer, like demographics or whatever, if you're a grant writer or things like that, it suddenly becomes much easier to say, oh, I actually only need to track a couple of things. Not everything's important. And I used to tell my clients on the agency side something very similar to what your boss said, is what we need to understand the story the data's telling us. Slow your roll. All these numbers are cool. Do you know what they mean? And they're like, this one's bigger. I'm like, okay, Copernicus, let's break this down. And then they would go, oh, I only need to know a few things and I just need to watch the difference over time. Yeah, that's it. And you can make a decision on it. Now, so Colton, if somebody, they're listening and without fail, somebody's going through a change, right? Because was it the only consistent thing is change? Change in taxes.
Yeah.
And death.
Yeah.
Change, taxes, death.
Your pillow.
But, and there it is. There's, yeah, we're going to have, man, we're going to have a ball in Etsy shop. But I'm looking forward to that. So what would you tell somebody that's listening and there's, I'm in the midst of change, I'm on the front end of it, or maybe I'm navigating and I've been doing it poorly. Like they're listening. What's a baby step they could make in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money, to improve the process of change that they're experiencing?
So I hate this quote, but I love it too, because I use it a lot. I'm like, you can't eat the elephant in one bite. And I think when oftentimes people think about change, they think about where they are and where they want to be. If that's clear, great. A lot of times with change, we sometimes don't know where we even want to be. We just know that change is happening. I always ask people, what's the first next step? And so in some cases, a lot of times the reason change doesn't happen is because you don't get buy-in from everyone and it falls apart. You get overwhelmed before you even start the race. And so it's sometimes it's like running a marathon versus going from A to B. It takes some time, and sometimes your direction will shift. And so being okay with recognizing you're going to have some roadblocks, some detours, but also realize you need to stop. And I'm mixing way too many metaphors right now. We're hopping in a car now. But realizing that as you go on this journey, sometimes you need to stop and get gas and stop and rest and just double check direction, because a lot of people will get super overwhelmed with the amount of work that has to happen with change, and just figuring out the next two or three steps. Okay, in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to do this. In the next 4 weeks, I will do this. Break it down instead of trying to do it all at once. The other thing with change, and this is with organizational change, and I do a lot with organizational culture and really getting organizations to be high performing, is a lot of people get really tired halfway through and give up, and then it gets worse. I tell people all the time, it's often going to get a little bit worse before it gets a lot better. And I warn them ahead of time. I'm like, you got to stick with sometimes these changes, and it's going to suck. And you have to get through it. But I've noticed a lot of nonprofit people want to be liked. I'm like, if you want to be liked, sometimes leadership ain't for you, my friend, because sometimes you have to make tough decisions and you can't make everybody happy. You're not a taco. So it's really helping people see.
That's a pillow. That's a pillow. Right.
That's one of my favorite quotes is, you can't make everybody happy. You're not a taco. And it's the same thing with leadership. I'm like, if you want to make everyone happy, I don't know, be a clown or a magician or something, but then people are still afraid of magicians and clowns. But really navigating through change is, don't give up, because then that just makes you look foolish or realize that it may take
lessens off. Your credibility.
Yeah, it does. And I've worked with a lot of leaders where I was working with them on a project and they decided, this is too much, when you stop. And I'm like, you're halfway. You're in that canyon where it's, I don't know if I should keep going. Maybe I should turn around. And if you turn around, you're never going to be able to come down this path again. We're going to stick out of the mountain. And all these boulders are going to fill up this canyon. Never going to be an option. So just sticking with it, taking breaks, celebrating the small wins, recognizing that the road of change is not freshly paved and smooth sailing. There are Texas-sized potholes you will inevitably hit. And that's okay. Sometimes you just need to reflect and keep going. But once you pull the pin out of that change grenade, you got to commit. You got to keep going. So
I love that. And there's some great metaphors. I feel like another pillow would be the change grenade. Put the pin out. So that'll be great. I don't know. Maybe that'll give me a good name for my next talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Colton, if people wanted to know more about you, your consulting firm, or the North Texas Nonprofit Institute, where would you send them? How can they connect?
Yeah, so I would love to stay connected with folks. If you have questions, I'm always happy to take emails and stuff. But for the consulting business, Colton Strasser Consulting, you can visit ColtonStrasser.com. And for the North Texas Nonprofit Institute, it's ntxnonprofits.org. We have a variety of trainings, conferences, events, a whole bunch of different things for nonprofits throughout North Texas. So feel free to check those out and stay up to date on all the fun learning opportunities that we have.
Awesome. I'm excited because I love going to the events and it feels like camp. I get to see all my friends. So we'll travel in packs. Colton, thanks so much for spending some time with me today. This was a fun conversation. It sounds like we probably have a few more topics we could dive into and come up with new pillows and t-shirt ideas as well. Lots happening in this episode. Thank you, listeners. If you made it this far, I hope that you got a ton of value out of this. I don't take it for granted that you'd spend some of your day listening to this podcast. If you got value, like, subscribe, rate, review, all the fun things on all the fun buttons on all the platforms, whatever is relevant. One, gives me feedback. I'd like to know what could I be doing better? What could I be doing different? What things would you like to see in the future? That feedback is helpful for me because help me help you. Help me help you. And then also your interactions will help more people discover this content so that they can get the help they need along their leadership journey. So it's a free and easy way for you to bless someone else. And that will make you feel warm and fuzzy inside. It's not as good as a taco, but it's darn close. Until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see you.